Welcome back to the Roundtable. I'm Katie Britton. We all know the story of Elizabeth Bennet and Mr. Darcy and the Regency-era prejudices of the classes in Jane Austen's Pride and Prejudice. We know that Elizabeth is quick-tongued, Lady Catherine de Bourgh is cutting in her opinions of those lesser than her, which is pretty much everyone, and Mr. Wickham is quite devious in his motives. But what if you give Austen's novel a twist? Say zombies. No, don't groan or reach for your dials. Hear me out. Seth Graham Smith has painstakingly created a different version of Austen's novel, and with wild success. In Pride and Prejudice and Zombies, Graham Smith added in sentences, switched words, and wrote new scenes in our beloved novel while preserving 85% of the original text. The reader can tell it's a labor of love, and while turning those pages, we can hardly believe that the undead are not a part of the original novel. I spoke with Graham Smith on the eve of the book's movie premiere and how it's been a long road to see his novel on the silver screen.
It's pretty extraordinary. I'm going to the premiere of the movie tonight in Los Angeles. So I've been reflecting on the last 7 years recently, and it was 7 years ago that I wrote this book with no expectations of it having any kind of success. It was just something that was interesting, and frankly, it was a job for a younger, up-and-coming writer. And the book changed my life in many ways that I never expected, led to me gaining ground in my screenwriting career. And now, 7 years later, I'm fortunate enough to be not only writing books, but then producing movies and more recently directing movies. So all of it is really traced back to the moment of Pride and Prejudice and Zombies. So in a way, this movie coming out is really almost more meaningful than anything in my career up to this point.
Which of those hats do you like putting on?
I still like being an author more than anything, just because of the freedom it affords you as a writer. Screenwriting is a more collaborative process and a more technical process. It has its own joys and its own pitfalls like anything else, but filmmaking is wonderful for its own reasons. Like I said, it's collaborative, and so you have more moving pieces that you have to fit together in order to make something, but that can also be rewarding as well. That can be rewarding in the sense that you get to work with actors and craftspeople and sometimes other writers and directors who you learn things from. But writing for me is in its purest form rather when you are just sitting down and writing a book.
You took one of the most beloved novels and put it in a completely new world and setting with our favorite characters. How is that for you now translating that to film? I mean, we have our good old Colin Firth and our Keira Knightley versions, and now you are giving us a completely new version on the silver screen.
Well, part of what's really exciting for me about this movie in particular is that I get to watch this movie primarily as a fan, as an audience member. You know, I've written other books where I've been more involved in the translation into film. This one was really something where I gave the book over to the filmmakers and really trusted them to have their own take on it. And fortunately, they were people who, for lack of a better term, got it in terms of, you know, what made the book work and the care that I had actually taken in translating one of the most beloved novels of all time into, you know, a genre piece. They applied that same level of care into their adaptation. And so, you know, they went out and got these incredible British actors, and they all treated it, I know it sounds crazy because we're talking about a movie called Pride and Prejudice and Zombies, but part of why I think the book worked and part of why I think the movie also works is that everyone treated it as if we were making sort of a masterpiece theater, really earnest adaptation of Jane Austen. It just happened to have these insane genre elements, these Walking Dead in it. So that's one thing I've always tried to get across to people in talking about the book is if you can get past the title, I think if you read the book, you'll really see that for whatever reason, at the time, I felt it was really important to get the context of the Regency period correct, to get the characterizations, to get the language of Jane Austen as close as I possibly could. I put a lot of time and effort into, you know, crafting it and so that the genre elements in the book were invisible, that they didn't just jump out at you off the page as being sort of grafted onto the existing novel. And to their credit, I think the filmmakers behind the movie adaptation approached it in the same way. They really took care everything from how the costumes were built to how the sets looked to how the performances came across to make this sort of a highbrow execution of a B-movie concept.
The caliber of the actors in this, we have Lily James, who our listenership knows as Rose from Downton Abbey, and we have Lena Headey from Game of Thrones, as well as Charles Dance, and then Matt Smith from Doctor Who. I mean, they are the supreme actors to be in a movie like this.
And they all took it very seriously, and they all approached it, even the physicality that the movie demands, they all approached it very seriously in terms of training how to fight and how to really do some of the things that these warrior aristocrats do in my novel. They do an excellent job translating that to the screen.
As you said before, you did take great care with mashing the two up. As I'm reading, I totally forgot that Elizabeth, Jane, and Mr. Darcy weren't zombie slayers. I mean, you weaved it so beautifully within the work of Jane Austen that Elizabeth is just as sharp with her tongue as she is with her blade.
Right, and that was really the whole, you know, the whole inspiration behind the idea of this was the novel, obviously, is beloved and is a masterpiece. So I had a very easy job in grafting on these silly genre elements onto it because all I had to do was preserve the ingenious characterizations that Jane Austen had created back in the early 1800s and just style them up a bit into absurdity. So like you said, Lizzie Bennet is sharp-tongued and sharp-witted and proud. And so, you know, it's very easy to imagine what kind of warrior she would be and what kind of warrior Mr. Darcy would be in comparison. And it really wasn't too difficult because the characters in the original novel are so incredibly well drawn and we understand them and their prides and their prejudices so clearly that you can really take those traits and apply them to almost anything.
Even Catherine de Bourgh, she is just cutting in the book, and she's one of the best zombie killers known. She's quick to tell Elizabeth that training in Japan is the proper place to do it, not in China, where they have all five girls have been sent. So just like how they didn't have a governess, how could you have a proper training in China?
Right, and it's, again, just going back to the book and going back to the differences of class, even within the upper class. I mean, these aristocrats, there are certain levels of aristocracy in the Regency era in England. And, you know, the Bennet family is clearly at the very lower end of what it means to be an aristocrat. And while Lady Catherine is obviously almost royalty, well, she, you know, she's a lady and as rich as the king himself. So finding ways to translate what was in the book and translate those existing prejudices and make them, again, absurd in a way, I thought, well, there's this difference in training in the early 1800s. And so, of course, all the very best aristocrats of greater means would go to Kyoto and train, whereas poorer aristocrats like the Bennets would have to settle for training in China. It's just another silly way of sort of exaggerating the themes and the prejudices that are already existent in Jane Austen's novel.
How does your copy of Pride and Prejudice look as you're reading? I mean, how do you know, oh, that would be a great place to kind of put my twist into it and see where the unmentionals should come and where you want characters to take that storyline?
Well, it's almost impenetrable now, my paperback copy of the book, because it's been written on. Every page has been underlined and written on and noted up to death. When I was writing the novel about 7 years ago, you know, I went through the book multiple times and would, you know, make little annotations and underline sections and look for opportunities to change or to insert all new material, and then translated that into a computer document where I had the original text of the novel and just literally started from the very beginning, going through and making changes and changing sometimes as small as changing a word, and then sometimes, you know, I would insert pages and pages of new material at a time and whatever was needed to really translate the story into this new absurd territory.
New absurd territory. But it doesn't feel absurd. That's the crazy part as we're reading this.
Well, and that was the hardest part of it. And then that's what I try to tell people the most. And the people listening to this, I'm sure there are some people listening at home saying, you know, well, you know, what a classless and absurd thing to do. And I've heard from many people over the years who just, you know, reject on the face of it the idea of tampering with Austen as sacrilege. And I get that. I understand that reaction. But what I try to tell people is, you know, the mashup craze, quote-unquote, that followed the publication of Pride and Prejudice and Zombies didn't produce a lot of, you know, sort of lasting examples. You know, not too many books stood the test of time or even a year or two. They were all just sort of passing fads. And I think what people failed to understand is that I take, even as silly or as, you know, B-movie as some of the concepts I dabble in can be, I take them very, very seriously. And when I wrote Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter, for instance, you know, another novel that got turned into a movie, I took the research and the characterizations and the portrayal of Lincoln and the portrayal of the time period extremely seriously. I mean, not quite as seriously as, you know, David McCullough takes his subjects, but I really do put a huge amount of effort into making these things make sense and making them seem authentic, even though they're ridiculous. And so I think what separates the mashups that work from the ones that don't are the ones who really take the execution seriously and the authors who really take the time to learn and understand their original subjects before they alter them into the ridiculous.
Right, because as I was thinking about it and all the subsequent mashups that have come onto the shelves, you are the grandfather of the mashup. I mean, what is it like to really create a whole nother genre for readers?
Well, obviously, it's exciting, but at the same time, you don't intend to do that. You know, I really do take each book as its own piece, as you know, and I'm not looking at these books as being sort of a continuation of mashups or absurdist history or whatever it's been called. You know, in some ways it's very exciting. In some ways it's also challenging because as a writer you want to have the freedom to explore anything that you're intrigued by at the time. And there's no ignoring the expectation of, well, you know, you've written these ridiculous genre-bending or history-altering books and what's going to be next. And I always hear from people, you know, when's your George Washington werewolf book coming out, or when's your, you know, Sense and Sensibility parody coming out? And it's exciting that people know you for a certain thing, but it's also challenging in the way that you want to sort of break out of that sometimes if necessary. So, and I think, honestly, I think the mashup thing kind of came and went. It's kind of run its course. You're not really seeing as many books come out now. And that can be said for myself, too, in looking forward to what I'm going to be working on next. It doesn't necessarily have anything to do with monsters or history, and some of it may, some of it may not, but it will ultimately depend on what I'm most intrigued by and most passionate about at the moment.
So do you have plans for another project that you can share with us?
Right now I do. I am sort of playing around with an idea for a new novel. Right now I'm also very busy with some movie projects, so when exactly I will sit down and write that remains to be seen, but I'm very fortunate in that I have a full plate in the movie side of things right now, and I'm excited about a lot of the things that are going on there. And I'm also excited about sitting down and having that great experience of writing a novel again, where you're just totally unencumbered and sort of bouncing on the high wire all by yourself. I really do love that process, and I love the feeling of completing a book. There's really no feeling, there's no artistic sense of accomplishment quite like that than being handed a fully bound copy of a book you've spent years writing. And so I'm looking forward to doing that again. Right now, I'm excited about seeing the movie tonight. I'm excited about people getting to see it next week in theaters, and hopefully, you know, more people being brought to the book as a result of the movie being out.
Well, it is always such a pleasure to read your books. The name of the book is Pride and Prejudice and Zombies, and the movie will hit the theaters on February 5th. Seth, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me back. Really enjoyed it.
Again, the name of Seth Graham Smith and Jane Austen's novel is Pride and Prejudice and Zombies. It is published by Quark. And the movie will be in theaters on February 5th. For The Roundtable, I'm Katie Britton.